Change is constant in life, and things we take for granted now may not be around to take for granted in a few years. The landscape and people around us change with time. Our next guest gives a glimpse of land and people in rural Lane County more than half a century ago. Sarah Jean Duncan Widnes grew up around Lowell in rural Lane County and writes of her formative years there in a short memoir. The book is The Dusky Afternoon, An Oregon Childhood. Sarah Widnes is a journalist at heart, but a public relations person by trade. She says it pays better. She's had clients on several continents. Sarah lives now in Vermont, where she runs the bed and breakfast, The Fan House. Sarah, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Well, Jeffrey, thank you very much. It's very, very, very nice to talk to you and to visit Oregon for a few minutes with you.
I have to ask first, Sarah, if Vermont reminds you of the rural Oregon of your youth.
Very, very much. The landscape is a much smaller and more intimate landscape here, but we have mountains and rivers and lakes and so forth, and it's very, very green. And the part of the Willamette Valley, Jeffrey, where I grew up, was very green as well. So, yes, I do relate to it, and the people are the same. I mean, when I moved into Barnard out of Manhattan, I instantly recognized the people who lived here because those are the people I grew up with, basically.
Oh, really? So it was just sort of like coming home for you, it sounds like.
Yes, country people, loggers, farmers, people who work with their hands and their backs and their minds.
So this is a real rural area you're talking about, certainly back then, and hasn't changed a great deal, it seems like, now in the area around Lowell as you look at the landscape and the town.
I was back there, maybe 5 or 6 years ago. I don't know that much about the economy now. I know that when I grew up, it was very much a logging community with sawmills and planing mills and logging trucks and trains carrying logs, all part of the vitality of the area. I think probably that's gone for the most part. What they've replaced it with, I don't know.
It sounds like in some ways the area was just sort of joining the 20th century about the time of your birth.
It absolutely was. My family moved there in 1945. I was 5 years old. And there's one line in my story that mentions that the electricity came on just about the time the Duncans came to their farm. And that was in 1945. And there were neighbors around us who still did not have electricity. So they're working with batteries and kerosene lanterns still. And this was just after World War II, or World War II is just ending at the time. And people would bring in their car batteries to plug into their radios so that they could listen to the news on the radios. I mean, it just seems so such a different world today, but that was the truth of living then.
Truly. And in fact, you mentioned at the Duncan household growing up, there was an outhouse despite the presence of indoor plumbing. I mean, was it just a relic, or did it actually serve some use?
Oh, the outhouses for all of our farmhouses and, establishments were key. I mean, plumbing was not necessarily a newcomer, but families were growing, and the outhouse was an essential part of a family's comfort, basically.
Because if you had six kids and two adults waiting for one bathroom.
Exactly. And also there was an outhouse out by the barn, which serviced, my dad and my brothers and any of the other fellows out there, working around the animals and at the barn.
We're talking to Sarah Jean, Duncan Widnes. Sarah Widnes is a Vermont resident now, but grew up in rural Oregon in the Lowell area. She wrote a book about those days called The Dusky Afternoon, An Oregon Childhood. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Maybe you have some memories of that area you'd like to share yourself. We're talking about Lowell and Lane County. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Sarah, how did your family end up in the Willamette Valley, especially since, as you point out, there was no particular farming background?
Jeffrey, that is a question that to this day remains a mystery. I think there was an intimation that the industrial-military complex or power was already getting out of hand, at least I'm sure in my father's mind. And, he had a minor in agriculture from college, and perhaps this had always been a dream of his. And my mother, happily went along. But it certainly was not in the background of either of them. Of course, grandfathers before them would have been farmers, but not in their immediate background. And it was not always easy. My mother had to do the milking, and before there were electric milking machines. And she would do the milking because her hands were used to wringing out baby diapers. Now, wringing out baby diapers even sounds like an anachronism in today's world. But in those days, everybody used cloth diapers. They had to be soaked in a diaper pail, then you had to wring them out and then wash them. So her hands were accustomed to that chore. My father's hands weren't. And, you know, handling the water and the milking and so forth was too much for him. And I have to laugh because that pink and green box with the clovers on it called Bag Balm was a staple both in the house and at the barn.
Oh, yeah, Bag Balm to get the skin supple again. After
exactly, yeah, exactly.
After all the calluses and stuff. How many kids in your family altogether?
There are four of us. I was the eldest, and I have three younger brothers. We're about 2 years apart.
And so where were you born then? I mean, were you born in the Willamette Valley?
No, three of us were born in Long Beach, California. And the fourth child was born up here in Oregon when we were at the farm.
All right, so from Long Beach, your parents, it sounds like, did a couple of scouting trips just to see if Lowell was the kind of area they wanted to live in?
You know, I don't think my mother ever came up. I think my father, set foot up here. He took the train up and stayed at the old Eugene Hotel. And wrote letters back talking about the farms he'd seen. And finally they came up together with the Mayflower moving van. And I remember we were in a motel outside of Eugene for a little while. Then I think they bought or rented a property in Eugene as a place to have a home base until they found the right farm. And it ended up, it was purchased as a walnut and filbert orchard. And that's the same place that was retrofitted eventually to become a dairy farm. So it's a little bit sad, but all those wonderful old walnut trees were yanked out to make pasture land.
Oh, same with the filberts?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's talk about you and the birth order. You mentioned you were the oldest child, so were you sort of like the family leader of the pack of kids? Were you the bossy pants in the family?
I think that when you're the oldest child and a girl and a mother who's probably wondering how in the world she ever got to where she is, you know, there were a lot of responsibilities. And my brothers and I all helped on the farm, and we all tried to help Mom and Dad. And, you know, we divided and conquered as we got older.
What kinds of chores did you do on the farm? Did you milk some of the cows yourselves?
I personally didn't. The boys, as they got older, did. And we had, you know, of course, by then the advantage of De Laval equipment and, you know, a modern milking facility. But my brothers helped Dad, you know, lay the irrigation pipe. And I have to add that so many people think that it rains all the time in Oregon. But we set pipe out, or Dad and the boys set pipe out, as early as April some years and didn't bring it in until October. So there are often very nice dry stretches, you know, and there is a rainy season, of course, in the winter. But I remember that irrigation pipe going into the fields day after day. And my chores range from, you'll laugh at this, we were all paid, I think, you know, maybe 3 pennies or 5 pennies a stem for tansy ragwort. Tansy ragwort is a weed that grows in pastures that if the cattle start to chew on, can immediately keel over from. It's a poison. So we were charged with pulling out all the tansy, and we also were charged with hoeing out the thistles that inhabited the pasture. So we would make a little pocket money there. And another chore would be every once a month cleaning the milk house walls. This was a pristine grade A milk parlor, and my job was to scrub the walls and make sure it was all really, really clean. At least once a month. And what else did I do? We used to feed the calves. We train the calves to drink from a teat bucket as the mother calf was being weaned from the mother. And I wrote in the book, it takes, you know, all of about 1 minute to lead the little baby calf's mouth with your finger over to the teat, and, you know, it's immediately done. I mean, they just take it so readily, but the poor mother is bawling out in the back, you know, in the back pen because she can't get to her baby.
So it sounds like you picked up these skills pretty fast. I mean, from coming from a non-farm family, of course, you were really young, but it sounds like you got to learn farm life in a real crash course and successfully so.
Well, I think certainly the children did. I mean, we grew up with that, but I think that the crash course came from my parents. I mean, they had no choice. This was not a position of privilege with hired hands, although I think there was intimation as time went by that they thought it would be a gentleman's farm and that Dad would be a gentleman farmer, which means, you know, we'd have people he could order about to do his work. Well, this was not that kind of farm at all, and everybody did work.
Work they did on the farm in the area around Lowell, Oregon, where Sarah Jean Duncan Widnes grew up. The book she wrote about it is called The Dusky Afternoon, An Oregon Childhood. You can visit with Sarah, maybe share some stories of your own from a life in rural Oregon from decades ago. We'd like to hear those. 800-838-3760 over the phone. Send them in by email to jx@jeffnet.org. In terms of child raising, I noticed that you go on for a bit of a riff here about the idea that it takes a village to raise a child was not in vogue, at least in your house back then.
No, I don't think it was in many houses. And I have to laugh because I referenced one mother, not by name, who seemed always to know more about what all of us were doing than our own mother knew. And I did get an email back from the son of that mother, and he said, "You were absolutely right." She did. She knew everything that was going on.
Oh, he knew exactly who you were talking about.
Exactly. But it was a small community, but it was not the kind of community where you're going to Starbucks once or twice a week to meet over coffee. I mean, we did not see each other as neighbors. We might get together on 4th of July and buy fireworks together. There would be the ice cream social at the Unity Methodist Sunday School. Those who went to church or who had time to go to church would meet there. There was the Grange, but it was organized meetings. They were organized meetings. It was not just a hail fellow well met kind of thing. But I do say that there was a hospitality innate that occurred when anybody came down the driveway. They would be asked to have a cup of coffee. There was always a hot pot of coffee going. So I think, the parents welcomed people coming down the driveway.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so not like, next door over the fence neighbors, but certainly
no.
Times when you get together. And a lot of, seems like a lot of structure to the life, farm, school, church, that kind of thing. So on that basis, how big a deal was it to go into town? And by this, I mean to go into Eugene when you were little.
Going into town was a big deal. And my mother, I think, would, try to find time with one of us, alone, and she would let one of us ride with her to town to go shopping. And for me, it was really exciting because I loved to sit in the car outside what used to be Safeway and just watch the human parade. It was my way of connecting with a world that I didn't know. I mean, I knew the cats and the dogs and the chickens and the cows, but I didn't know people. So that was an exciting thing for me. And I also loved the pneumatic tube at Quackenbush's in Eugene. It's a hardware store, and I think that may still be there. That was really exciting for a child.
What did they deliver in the pneumatic tubes?
you would put the attendant downstairs would put your money into the pneumatic tube. It would be changed upstairs in about over a balcony area, and then sent back down. So you'd get your change via the pneumatic tube. So there was no cashier writing your face downstairs.
Almost like watching a model train set or something.
Exactly, exactly.
That's fun. So outside of Eugene, back on the farm in the Lowell area, you talked already about the timber industry being at its apex then, or at least close to it. It sounds like with all the homes being built post-war in the late 40s, early 50s, it must have really been humming out there.
I can't extend that thought because I don't know beyond the logs coming down the Lowell Fall Creek Road to the mills. I don't know about the industry beyond that. I mean, that would be a whole other story. There wasn't a lot of building in our area.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because, you're talking about post-World War II, it's still really, really a war mentality. It's depressed. I mean, people are still for a long time, struggling to make ends meet. And I'm sure that we were not alone. Every family kitchen had that drawer where, balls of rubber bands and string were stored because you didn't just go out and buy these things. You had to make do with what you had.
All right. So the kitchen junk drawer was more than just junk. It was
exactly
collecting stuff. If people weren't farming in Lowell or in a business that supported farmers, were they generally in the timber industry? It sounds like there wasn't much else to do around there at that time.
Well, they would have been in the timber industry, and several of my friends definitely had family members who were loggers. The other industry that came into town right after World War II was the, I call it an industry, the Army Corps of Engineers, who constructed the three dams all within about a 6 to 10 mile radius of the farm. And this brought in influxes of people while the dams were being constructed, and temporarily changed the communities in which these people lived, and you know, drove up the school enrollment numbers, and that which again dropped when the communities left, and left behind the three dams, Lookout Point, Dexter Dams, and then the Fall Creek Dam over on Fall Creek.
So that's a lot of change in the physical environment in a fairly short amount of time.
It's huge. Mm-hmm. It's huge. And I think that the change was happening all around us, with our families, with the ways we worked, with what we perceived as work. And I didn't follow change beyond age 13. I stopped my story at about age 13 when I'm coming into high school, because I did not want to rewrite all the stories about hoop skirts and hip hop and all the things that went on during that late 50s, early 60s period, which I was a part of as well. But as those stories have been told so many times, change was rampant, and I don't think that we knew at the time how rampant it was.
Now you've made me curious, though. I'm curious to know what the thought was in Lowell when Elvis Presley first appeared, for example.
You know, I don't think we knew about Elvis for quite a while. Remember that there's a little bit of a time gap going on here. I'm not sure that we had Shaboom Shaboom. I don't know who wrote that.
Mm-hmm.
We had all the radio stations, but I think there might have been a little bit of a time lag in terms of Elvis and some of the city cultural icons that occurred. We might have been a little bit behind the time.
Probably. Sarah Jean Duncan Witness is our guest on The Exchange. Her memoir about growing up in the area around Lowell, Oregon, in Lane County, is recounted in The Dusky Afternoon, An Oregon Childhood. So given that you mentioned the radio already, and this is pre-TV, certainly for most of this time, I'm thinking. So what did people do for entertainment and diversion in Lowell back then?
Well, I can't speak for other families. I do know that for my own family, we had a healthy subscription base of magazines: Saturday Evening Post, Life Magazine. You know, as the boys got older, Boys Life. You know, whatever I was reading, and the family shared these information pieces. We listened to the radio every dinner hour. We would have, you know, some radio show on. It, you know, it could be Jack Benny, you know, the old comedian, or somebody else fun, and there would always be news shows on the radio. And I remember that Dad had us listening to the radio. Now, is this good for family dinner table conversation? Maybe yes, maybe no. Maybe we commented on what we heard or not. I don't remember that. But the radio was omnipresent. The television came very late to my family. I think I was probably 16 when my dad decided to get a television. It's very funny because he first put it in the living room where he couldn't see it, because I think both mom and dad thought it was a bad influence. And finally, you know, over the months, the television then took center stage and everybody could watch it and so forth. But in the meantime, I like to think that we produced the first pay TV, because we had neighbors who had television long before we had it. And we would go down to Grandma and Grandma Leslie's with a wooden box my dad created with a slot on the top of it. And the box stayed on top of the Leslie's television. And when we went down by invitation to watch television, we took a quarter down for the Sunday school box. So I like to call this the first pay TV.
You're way ahead of your time.
Right, exactly.
So was Lowell the kind of place that would turn into a ghost town during hunting season?
You know, hunting season was simply, at least in our part of the world, a time when you were free to shoot the animals that you saw all the time around you in the fields or across the road. It could be an excuse to go over to John Day. I know my dad and brothers sometimes went on camping hunting trips, but did it turn into a ghost town? No, because people did not have that kind of leisure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Not like today. And certainly, I know that, you know, hunting is big in Oregon, and it's a huge thing here in Vermont, and it does become a major time of year. But it wasn't, I don't think, considered, you know, an economic recreation force at that time.
Okay, makes sense. Sure, people didn't have a lot of spare time and money.
No.
There's lots of material from other writers in your book, Sarah. I wonder what's up there.
What's up there is I studied literature. I've always been a big reader, and I love the fact that Garrison Keillor preceded me. That was a lot of fun. But you know, it's a book that's easy to access, I think, by anyone. I think people who enjoy reading and who may have a little bit of a literary background will pick up some references and innuendos that are sort of fun as well.
Mm-hmm. You've been gone from the area since what? Your late teens, early 20s?
Basically, when I got married, when I was 20.
Mm-hmm. And how often have you been back since you left?
Well, when my parents were alive, I tried to get back every year. It's not that many times. I did go to Eugene one winter. I took what I called it a self-styled sabbatical, and I stayed in Eugene for about 3 months. During our hard winter here in Vermont, it gets very snowy and icy back here and cold.
Very cold, yeah.
So I took January, February, March off and in a warmer place and enjoyed driving out to the farm, driving up Winbury Creek, and revisiting some of the haunts. And I was there long enough for the flowering shrub that I referenced called Indian plum to come into bloom, because I remembered Indian plum and I wanted to, look at it and feel it. And I did, and I smelled it. And, I needed some of those visceral, tangible evidences of my childhood, which I found in that 3 months.
Does it still seem like a fairly sedate place to you now?
Absolutely. It's beautiful.
All right. The book is called The Dusky Afternoon, An Oregon Childhood. Sarah Jean Duncan Widnes put it together and joined us today on the Jefferson Exchange. Sarah Jean, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right. Good to have you.